Hello, and thank you for joining us today. This is Paul Saunders with the Center for the National Interest. Today, I'm going to be asking three questions to Tatiana Mitrova. Tatiana is a really outstanding energy expert, a research fellow at Columbia University's Center for Global Energy Policy, and also director of the New Energy Advancement Hub. So Tatiana, thank you very much for being with us today and for your willingness to answer today's three questions. I thought we would start with President Trump's tariff announcements last week. Just for our listeners, today is Monday, April 7th, and the tariff announcements came a few days ago. Tatiana, as you look at that, if those American tariffs stay in place, what kind of impacts do you see possibly on global oil and gas, especially for the big producers, let's say the U.S. and in the Middle East, and big consumers, you know, like China, European Union members, other Asian consumers?
Thank you, Paul. Thank you for the invitation and for the great question. I think most of the people started to realize already that the tariff policy, at least at the beginning, leads to a lot of uncertainty, to the much worse market performance. It is initiating, and we see already the response from the tariffed countries. So China has already announced its tariffs on the U.S. goods. So with the international trade going through these very turbulent times, it is quite, I think, reasonable to expect economic slowdown. Yeah, I wouldn't yet call it global recession. Yeah, but certain decline in the global GDP, I think we have to admit that it's nearly inevitable already. Even if they negotiate and go to zero tariffs in the next couple of weeks, nevertheless, this huge uncertainty is already there. And global oil and gas demand is a direct function of the global GDP. These two markets, frankly, were not in an excellent situation even before the tariff war started. So, moreover, with the oil market specifically, there was an agreement between OPEC Plus members made several months ago about increase in the oil output starting from April 1st. Coincidence? I don't know. But right now, when most of the observers are expecting economic slowdown, OPEC has also started to increase oil output, which obviously leads and has led already, we can see it in the market, to the lower oil price. It is definitely a problem to the oil exporting countries, first of all, for the Gulf countries, which rely heavily on these revenues, but also for the other oil producers like Russia, Brazil, you name them. And at the same time, I am afraid it will not be that beneficial for the importing countries like Europe and the US, because at the moment they have many other headaches which will not allow them to really benefit largely from this price decrease. So it is rather an indication of weaker global economy. With natural gas, the situation is aggravated by this enormous LNG glut that everyone is expecting to come already in 2026. So we are talking about lower gas prices for longer, 3, 4, 5 years, which is definitely also bad news to the gas producers, but also, it is potentially shifting the whole interfuel competition with this cheaper gas. So it will affect the energy policies, the energy investments in different countries. So I assume we will feel the consequences of these tariff announcements for at least 3 to 5 years as minimum.
Wow. Well, we'll watch and see. Second question. How about the energy transition? There's been a lot of coverage already in the first few days after the announcements of the tariffs of potential impacts there. You've done a lot of work on the global energy transition. What possible consequences do you see?
I think this process was a bit inevitable because all the discussion about energy transition and a lot of pink pony stuff when people were expecting that it should happen extremely quickly, like tomorrow, without any significant effort. So this life in illusions, it had to end at a certain moment. Now it coincided with very tough rhetorics related to all the climate change topic. Yeah, first of all, with the US planning to leave Paris Agreement and so on. And also supported by these economic stimulus on the ground related to the tariffs on all the energy transition equipment. Yeah, talking about solar panels, batteries, electric vehicles. So most of the components will be affected because most of the components are produced in China. Yeah, so here it is like a double blow for the energy transition, but at the same time, I think it has, so it will be difficult, obviously. Certain projects, and we see it already, they will slow down or stop. There are already during the past 2 months many announcements about freezing wind farms, solar projects, not only in the US, by the way, in Europe as well. Yeah, but at the same time, I think maybe there is a bit of a healthy component here. Yeah, like bringing back the economic rationale and not only being driven by the calls for the brighter future, but also by the economic rationale. I assume that in the majority of the regions, I'm not talking now about the US, but the rest of the world will find out a more or less balanced approach to the China's energy transition equipment supplies or critical minerals supplies, so all this stuff. And at the same time, I think there will be more strict approach towards the economic competitiveness, yeah, the economic performance of the new energy projects. Which should have happened earlier or later. Yeah. So yeah, I assume there will be some slowdown in the new capacity additions. Maybe also the state support in certain regions will be reduced, different types of subsidies and other incentives. But we see that even without these state subsidies, there are plenty of regions where renewables are just simply competitive on the cost basis. And they are also making very significant input in the energy security, and they are helping. I mean, in the period of time when these fears of hybrid war and different types of hybrid attacks is becoming enormously high, probably for the first time during the last 80 years. Decentralized new energy is actually a very good solution. If you just take a look at Ukraine, which is experiencing the real massive military attacks on the daily basis, what helps to survive is decentralized distributed energy based on independent, like fuel generators, but also to a large extent on solar. So it is something new, yeah, which we didn't keep in mind when we were talking about new energy. Yeah, it was mainly driven by the climate concerns, but now it's also security and resilience concerns as well, which are making them more attractive in many regions, surprisingly. So, to sum it up, difficult years ahead. for the new energy. But at the same time, I think the best, the most competitive solutions will survive and they will expand because there is quite strong logic standing behind them.
Last question. You touched at the end there on Russia's invasion of Ukraine. Obviously, there's a U.S.-Russia negotiation underway. President Trump wants to bring about a quick ceasefire, which at least so far hasn't been too quick. But as we look at the energy and global economic context here and the tariffs, looking back historically, many, at least in the United States, would take the view that the collapse in oil prices decades ago was one of the leading factors that contributed to the collapse of the Soviet Union. What kind of economic pressure could Russia face if there's kind of a long-term low oil and gas price environment because of wider global economic conditions?
Yes, surprisingly, you are right. Even without specific, secondary sanctions or secondary tariffs, even in the most positive scenario of these peace talks, which just started, there could be an outcome when simply due to the global recession, oil prices go down to, let's say, below $50 per barrel. It will be already quite painful for the Russian Federation. We've experienced back in 2020 during COVID, in April 2020, actually, just 5 years ago, Russia faced this sudden oil price collapse. And when oil prices go below, let's say, $35 per barrel, it's becoming already nearly impossible to sustain the economy in the longer term. Yeah, for 1, 2, 3 months, it's okay. There are reserves. Even 1 year, it will be extremely difficult, but still possible. Yeah, and if we assume that by that time the military actions will stop and those expenditures will be gone, then yeah, it's easier. If you have to run the economy at $35 per barrel and at the same time to expand military activity, then I really doubt that it's doable. If it is $50 per barrel, which is basically the scenario, the target number Trump was always mentioning, $50 per barrel, it's also far worse than $68 that Russia had last year on average for its oil exports. So it will not lead to an immediate economic collapse, as I've mentioned. So, okay, if it's not 35, if it's 50, then Russia still has potential for another couple of years of weaker economic performance, not 4.1% GDP like it was in 2024, but probably something around zero. It will mean Russia's economic slowdown, rising social tensions, because right now they are actually covered by additional governmental spendings. Definitely a far extremely limited ability for any military actions, because once again, the human power for all these military actions, they are paid pretty high contractual fees for this performance, and they will be probably unavailable at lower oil price. More intense struggle between the different elite groups, which will lose their feeding bases. Internal tensions, certain destabilization on the political side, much weaker economic performance. It will depend largely on how long this situation will persist. With the collapse of the Soviet Union, which you've mentioned, there were several factors. So, first of all, extreme inefficiency of the Soviet managerial system, which I would say is doing better in Russia today than it was in the last years of the Soviet Union. Oil price decline, yeah, it could be. But then there was also war in Afghanistan. Let's compare it with war in Ukraine and Chernobyl. A massive, very, very expensive, and very, very damageful accident. which also affected the whole country. So, for the Soviet Union collapse, there were several very important reasons. Oil price alone, I don't think, should have led to this outcome. With Russia, yeah, we can imagine a scenario, well, when there is also a coincidence of different negative factors, but I wouldn't really put all the bets on this scenario. Yeah, it could turn other way around, and as Russian leadership has demonstrated during the last 25 years at least, it has very high adaptability, and if there is an opportunity to adapt, it will use it. So I wouldn't count only on this coincidence for the international diplomacy, let's put it this way.
A good reminder. Well, thank you so much for answering our three questions. Again, this is Paul Saunders with the Center for the National Interest, talking to Tatiana Mitrova, a research fellow at Columbia University's Center for Global Energy Policy. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Paul. Thanks.